At the beginning of the millennium, Mary L. Gray started a project about the LGBT community in the rural Midwest. For 19 months, Gray compiled interviews, statistics, and news coverage into her book, Out in the Country, Youth Media and Queer Visibility in Rural America. Through her research, Gray asked the question, how is a queer identity practiced in rural areas, and how has the new media contributed to their self-discovery? I'm Avalon Lustig.
I'm Allison Darlin.
And I'm Lucy Murderosian.
There have been many developments surrounding the LGBT community since Gray's book.
Like the legalization of gay marriage, which happened in June 2015.
This morning, the Supreme Court recognized that the Constitution guarantees marriage equality. In doing so, they've reaffirmed that all Americans are entitled to the equal protection of the law, that all people should be treated equally, regardless of who they are or who they love.
But despite that, the queer community has still been facing a lot of problems, most of which come from DOMA.
DOMA, or the Defense of Marriage Act, was passed in 1996. It defines marriage as a union between a man and a woman and allowed individual states to refuse to recognize same-sex marriage.
In the epilogue of Mary Gray's book, she talks about how anti-gay marriage advocates worked with Republicans and Democrats on the DOMA initiative for Kentucky's November 2004 ballot. Sean, one of the subjects in Mary Gray's book, told her in the early 2000s that even though gay marriage may one day become legalized, he still believed that there would be problems facing the queer community. And he wasn't wrong. Sean recently got married after the Supreme Court ruled in Obergefell v. Hodges that state-level bans on same-sex marriage are unconstitutional. But DOMA hasn't completely gone away. It still affects many queer people across the United States, including Sean, which is what we talked about with Mary Gray.
I'm so glad you brought up Sean, because he's gotten married.
Oh, wow.
So we've been back in touch in the last year, actually, after he got married to a young man. He had met, he was tutoring him. He speaks English as a second language. He's an immigrant to the area, one of many immigrant workers, migrant workers in Southeast Appalachia and Kentucky. I know it's made such a difference to him that he is able to get married, that he was able and is very visible, and depending on where you look, very visible and out with his husband. I think at the same time, Sean is certainly aware of this, that Kentucky is one of those states, if you're not in the right city, you don't have employment protection. Sean can be married to, you know, his husband, but he can be fired from his job for being married to his husband. That's still legal. So I think we have to continue to examine how DOMA can certainly make a difference. It can't be disconnected from the other places where it's very possible for someone to be disenfranchised because they're LGBT identifying or somebody just thinks they are.
At the end of Out in the Country, Gray talks about queer realness. What she means by that is, in the past, there really hasn't been any representation for queer people on what a queer person looks like. And if there had been, then it was a fictional story. She brings up Veronica York's 1985 documentary for HBO, What Sex Am I? It re-aired on Discovery Channel in the early 2000s, so many of the subjects whom Gray interviewed got to see it, and it provided that queer realness exposure for them.
Kathy's feminine appearance is the result of hormones and silicone implants. She's been living as a woman now for 18 months. She's dancing in this club to earn the money for her sex reassignment surgery. Not a person in the audience would suspect that Kathy is a man.
So what I found interesting about the documentary was that a lot of the language used is outdated now, and it's actually offensive.
Well, I think the title itself is an example. What sex am I? A lot of people in our society can't differentiate between sexual orientation, sex, and gender.
It was the beginning of a conversation for a lot of these transgender youth with their parents. I know in the story, one person sat their parent down and was like, look, I want you to watch this documentary. And it was a start of a conversation for them to have with their parent about being transgender. Family support was an important theme that came up a lot in Gray's book, and more specifically, PFLAG was, which stands for Parents, Families, and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. I remember PFLAG coming to my high school a lot, and it would just be parents with queer children talking about how they came to accept their child's sexuality. PFLAG is actually really important for the rural Midwest, which is what we see in Gray's book. So when families could see that they were accepting their child's sexuality, then other families would see that that's okay to do as well.
I never had PFLAG come to my school. In fact, I've never had been educated about the LGBT community until I became a resident assistant here at UMass. And before each semester, they require all the RAs on campus to go through training. And sometimes the trainings have different themes, but they usually cover social justice topics. And one year they covered the LGBT community, and we learned about very specific identities, how to approach conversations surrounding these topics and identities, and how to interact and to embrace the differences rather than to alienate them, and basically get educated about it. And I became really immersed in the community, and I didn't realize how specific and how expansive people's identities could be. I had no education prior, and now I feel confident in having a discussion about it. But it really made me empathetic to the community.
Not only did PFLAG help advocate for the queer community in Kentucky, but so did students and gay-straight alliances at their high schools. Nevertheless, national organizations that serve the queer community largely overlook the rural Midwest. And that bothers Mary Gray.
It bothers me that I still hear national organizations and urban-based nonprofits often reference somewhere in the Midwest or somewhere rural when they want to point out what we need to fix. So I still feel like there's, from the institutional level, a real divide between urban and rural organizing, and that the urban centers still imagine that they need to save the rural margins. I do think that over the past 10 years, there's been as much connection among rural and urban young people as there has been uptake of particular digital technologies. At the same time, I think because so much of social media is ironically so local that, you know, often Facebook or Twitter or Snapchat or Instagram is so much a reflection of an immediate location that I don't really have a good sense. I don't know if any of us have a good sense of how much that's interrupted some of the networking that was happening in the early 2000s among rural and urban young people, particularly students who were very active in GSAs and gay-straight alliances and really had to turn to each other for strategies. And that was cutting across regions, cutting across states, and across an urban-rural divide. I don't know if that happens as much. I don't know that we have any research that tells us.
Mary L. Gray is a senior researcher at Microsoft Research and fellow at Harvard University's Berkman Center for Internet and Society. She's the author of the 2009 book Out in the Country, Youth, Media, and Queer Visibility in Rural America, where she writes about, as she calls it, queer identity work. Such a pleasure to talk to you today.
Yes, cool. Thank you.
My pleasure. Take care.